politics as usual. All right, welcome back. Welcome back for another issue, a second episode. Second episode? We can't say another issue. Ain't nobody reading anything. Another episode of politics as usual? I don't know. We're going to find out about it this time. Usual. In one way or the other, man. With a question mark. Y'all, I'm Matt Whitener. You know me from the Scenario Sports. I'm happy to be breaking ground on the SOLC network right now with an all noop broadcast. It's way overdue. It's time to do it. We're not gonna talk about any of that stuff. I'm just happy to be a part of historic. We can talk about those politics offline, but we're gonna talk about big time politics, what it means for the people. And on this episode, we're gonna definitely dive into what it means here on the local end of St. Louis, on both the city and on the county ballot, and kind of every corner you can touch with that thing and what it really means. But before I go in much further, I want to welcome in our true host, the true talent of the program, which is certainly not I, who has a second-level GED politics understanding, but I'm here to learn. Marco Davidson, Chris Carter, brothers, what's going on?
Thanks for having us.
Man, great, an honor to be here as well, man.
Y'all are having us, man. This is y'all program, man. I'm just kind of here to be the, who's the young lady that was on the debates the other day? I'm just kind of here to sit in the middle of the knowledge. At least there's knowledge on both sides of the podium in this.
Definitely. But you still control the mute button, so you good, man. You still in control, so we ready though.
Yeah, there's not gonna be much debate.
You know, yeah.
Well, first off, before we jump into things, man, I gotta give y'all credit, man. I was just a listener on the first show, man, but I really enjoyed it. I politics is something that I think that a lot of people just kind of take it the way it is and don't realize that they really have an opportunity to look into it and make it be relatable to themselves. I think y'all did an awesome job at that. So, man, much respect to y'all for tackling the issues and not caring, taking the gloves off before you can put them on.
No, I appreciate it, man. And, you know, it is challenging, man. It is tough. And unfortunately, sometimes politics are extremely confusing, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not. And, you know, a lot of people say, man, I don't really do politics. I let people know politics will do you. So, you honestly have to learn every single nitty bitty like type stuff, but you should know what's going on and what's happening, and because they have impact our lives, our daily life, man, how we interact and how we social or even social sometimes. So I'm encouraging people just to learn as much as possible and recognize, and again, give themselves grace for not knowing everything, because we don't learn these things in school like we should.
And I would say even give yourself grace for not knowing everything about some things. It works better in their interest for you not to know everything about it. You know, in some regards, it's better for you not to understand things and to get information late and to, you know, have to kind of make do when you get to the polls. But that's what we kind of want to head off here and, you know, give you a little bit of insight into things the way that we see it going forward. So I don't want to delay. I was talking about this before the show. We're going to go down the ballot again for St. Louis City, St. Louis County, hit on some of the highlights that are there, hit on the different sections and the things it means to look at in that. So I'm going to start with the top of the ballot, in every corner of this country. And what we're not going to do is talk about the differences between Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and the other three candidates who are on the ticket, who I couldn't call out if they walked past me and shook right now. But I do want to talk about just the... any takeaways that y'all have of late from the last week or so in the national circus? Because it's been quite the time. DeMarco's thinking about everything he ever thought about in his life right then.
Yeah. Like, so go ahead, Chris. I'm going to let Chris go.
No, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. So, you know, the last time we talked, as well as even this past week, you know, not only did we have Ice Cube, who is still in the news about the contract with Black America. But then even was it Donald Trump Jr. who tweeted a picture of him and 50 Cent. Now 50 Cent is talking about supporting Donald Trump because of the tax plan. And it brought the question to me, can Black people be one issue voters? Do we have that, like, you know, 'cause we often talk about people voting their self-interest. And 50 Cent's self-interest is taxes. Like he wants to pay less taxes. Like I said about Ice Cube, we want to pay less taxes in a whole different income bracket than I most likely will ever be. And you know, so I'm not mad at 50 Cent. I'm more probably upset with people trying to hold celebrity or listen to celebrity for their advice. Again, because 50 Cent made it clear, taxes. So when it comes to the president, I'm encouraging people to look at your self-interest at the top of the ticket. It's top of the ticket. But to me, I'm also looking at now, like, this is also somewhat of a trial. Like, what type of America do we want to live in? And we were able to see what type of America Trump has been able to provide. Do they think Biden can provide a different type of America that they want to live in or not want to live in? And let me say this as well, because it's irritating. I'm sorry. I got to get it off my chest. People keep saying, oh, black people are just voting for Biden because they're not Trump. It's an anti-Trump vote. And thing is, okay, that may be true, but there are, like, it's not black people, black men specifically. That's a whole nother situation. Black men are not capping for Biden. We ain't jumping out the woodworks for Biden. There's no capless for Biden. There's no black men for Biden website. Like, we're not, like, we don't like the options we're being provided. So that's why I ask, like, well, I don't know if black people have the privilege or the luxury to be one issue voters, but if they are, you know, or if you feel you a one issue voter, whoever, you know, good for you and follow your conscience. But I think sometimes our communal background or how we think we should be more communal, more familial, sometimes, you know, rubs up against the whole concept of just voting our self-interest.
I think that black people should be open to voting for whoever they think is the best candidate, just like every other race. I think that we get caught up in, I think we talked about this last show, where, you know, we just automatically start voting Democratic because our mamas voted Democratic, and our mama's mama, and our mother's father, and all of that. And I think that people are smarter than that. I think that we are extremely smarter than that, and we want to see some action for our vote. I think that people feel like, I think that African Americans feel like that our vote has been taken for granted for many years locally and nationally. So that's why you possibly hear more African Americans speaking out against the Democratic Party and about policies that impacted us and our community, you know, more than others. But in this case, I don't see why any African American could support Trump. I don't. This is me personally. I don't support Trump. I am not excited to go out and vote for Joe Biden. But my anger towards the policies that Trump has put forth, that's my reason for voting for Biden. It's not because Biden has the best crime bill plan or that he is trying to put so much money in the budget towards our community. It's not that. It's simply because of the policies that Trump has put forth and the divisiveness and the division that he has caused in our communities.
I think that's a good point. And Polo, I want to go back to what you had said about the the things that black voters can vote for. Number one, I absolutely think that the complexities of the African-American situation are just too deep for you to be a one-topic voter. However, I think that those complexities are so deep that there's no way we possibly could expect to vote on progress on all of those things with anybody running for office in any one place, because it's a bigger burden than one person can take on to fix. So with that being said, Chris, kind of your point, what you were saying about the, about not being excited about Biden, I want to put ourselves in a place about the people to say they're not excited for Biden, but they're happy to vote for Kamala.
Yeah.
What about the representativeness of the ballot here? Because it has some interesting, let's say, segments between, you know, people voting for the interest they've always known, you know, whether you're voting for a party because that's how you were raised. And I think that that's how the majority of people in America get their initial political party, because a lot of people don't stay the same political party their entire life. But, you know, you're voting for your traditional party, but you're also voting for a representative candidate in Kamala. That's kind of a complex place to be in, it feels like. Or is it?
Marco?
Oh, okay. I was letting you go, man. I agree 100%, man. It is very complex because there is so much when we think about what goes into not just the presidency, but we're talking about representation, goes into the different, like there's a difference, right? There's a difference between experiences. I think they come down to some of the experiences or some of the life lived experiences that we've had. I remember growing up and we knew there was a difference between the black people who grew up in the county and the people who grew up in the city. Just that small, like less than a mile away from each other, we are having different lived experiences. And it's not until we get older until we realize, oh, some things were the same, but some were different. And when we think about those who've been able to get those nods, get those looks, or get that connection or that access. Even going back to 50 Cent, right? Like, I'm mindful to not downplay whatever the genius of 50 Cent he has. And the fact that he has a level of access. Who knows what he's been exposed to? Who knows how he learned politics, right? So he might know something. So I don't ever want to say, oh, he's an entertainer. He needs to just act and shut up or rap and shut up. I think we definitely start losing when we start telling our entertainers who have different types of level of access. But when it comes to our politicians, who we may know, may not know, may not have heard, we don't know. Like, and we start asking, like, where'd you grow up at? Like, who can vouch for you? Who can vouch for you? So I think that's usually some of those questions that start coming up, especially as just candidates. But then when we looking at, for example, I did research, and I really appreciate the brother Marlon Smith out of Texas, who is a professor, who has a PhD. He actually did go and break down the Biden plan, the Lift Every Voice plan. Like, Trump's plan is pure garbage. But the Biden plan is well-packaged trash. Like, because literally it is like, yep, we understand that black people are struggling. We know y'all get the first fired, redlining. We understand all that. But we're going to make sure we give money to the state banks, and the state banks can then put the money to, you know, minorities, people of color. And we're like, wait a minute, a minority is a gay white man. A minority is a white woman. That doesn't even say black people specifically. So that's one of the issues. That's why I think, like, you know, Chris said, people are becoming smarter. I'm becoming wiser. We know the coding. We know the words. We're not falling for it anymore. And we do want something in return. And just because, so representation, and I think this is also one of the pushbacks of Obama, like, thank you, Obama. But representation just ain't good enough. We actually need not just representation, not just access, but actual power to make those changes. Representation, and that's something that our grandparents fought for, to get that one. Like, no, we need somebody who has that one and the power to change things. You know, so I think that's some of the things that are different now, too.
I think that the last thing I want to say about the national race before we start to jump into the local end as well. And Chris, I'll start with you on this, is that, you know, you mentioned that Barack Obama time period there, and about, you know, that representation and what that means. excuse me. I've also seen that we've had a lot of politicians or a lot of people that have been inspired to be seen and to be represented. Do you think it's a more complex time to be both a candidate and to be a voter than ever before, simply because of the duality of things that you have to do? You have, and I'll give an example of what I mean. I'll go back to Kamala Harris, you know, who is an African-American, who is also biracial, who is also a woman, who carries all of these different elements within her, you know, but she's got to speak to all those different things and do that balancing act. Whereas, you know, in the past, at least, we've seen, I think just as recently as the Obama election, you saw people were like, that is a black person. That's who I want to get behind as minorities. But in the last, you know, 10 to 12 years, it seems like everybody in the wake of Obama has taken up wanting to have their own individual representation for their own, you know, what serves them directly too. So, you know, coming back, bringing that all back around, you think it's more complicated now to be both a voter and a candidate at this particular time and have that balancing act of concerns?
No, you know what? I believe that at the end of the day, you are who you are, and I think that you should be true to yourself, and true to the people that you were trying to represent, in a sense of, look, if I'm not from a certain place, or if I'm not, or if my background isn't something, I'm not gonna try to replicate that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm gonna stick to what to what's real. And I think that that's one thing that we loved about Obama. I think he didn't try to be something that he was not. And I think that that's all that we are asking from our representatives and people who are on the ballot. Look, just keep it real with us and we will support you, or we won't, because eventually it all comes out, you know? So,
absolutely.
In a sense of it being a complex thing, no, I think that Kamala is who she is. I think she is extremely strong, and she believes that she could win this as herself, not as something that she is duplicating or trying to fake. I think that she is a strong reason why a lot of African Americans are going to come out and probably support Biden, because a lot of people, you know, they may be talking about staying home. We don't know. I mean, I don't know, but I know that for me, I'm more excited to come out and vote for her.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, versus anything else. And I don't think that it's a time where it's more complex, though.
Polo, before I jump to you, I wanted to add on to that point real quick, and apologize for cutting in line. I remember how I felt in 2008, or was it 2007? Whatever it was, years blend together, a lot of drinks ago. But I think about how I felt that morning, getting up to go and vote for Barack Obama. You know, who was just, it was such an unbelievable thing, you know, as a black male to see that being possible. It was also an unbelievable thing as a black person. One of the things that's kind of crazy though is that as I was casting my vote, and I voted a few weeks ago, all these things going on almost made me lose out on the moment until I was getting ready to vote, saying, oh, damn, I'm getting ready to vote for a black woman to be vice president of the United States, which resonated differently than Barack, the first or the second time, which were both very different experiences. It resonated differently than when Hillary Clinton was running, when it was more of like an intrigue thing to me, like, wow, a woman is the top of a ticket for president of the United States. That's something I, you know, the way that my mind was formed and things I believed, I just didn't see. So I'm really excited for the women that are getting the opportunity to see themselves be embodied in that place. And I hope that no matter what happens is that it opens up that door for them to be voting for her for the top of a ticket one day, or a person that truly embodies them the same way. Because that's still, whether we believe in the impact of what the president can do or anything like that, like you were saying, representation matters, and seeing that it be embodied matters, and it's a stepping stool to other things. So I just wanted to say that, because I do think that there are people that are going to be going to vote that are going to have that feeling and have that I'm here to support on that alone. And that might be the only thing they vote for.
Oh, definitely. And so I don't know if it's necessarily as more complex, but I think it's different challenges now in 2020, especially with it comes to interest groups, right? When we're talking about a black woman, and unfortunately, I don't like all the divisiveness that does happen that comes with a black woman, because unfortunately, and that's one thing I think this election is doing, is also kind of like exposing or forcing different conversations to happen. Almost, it seems like it's organic, but it's not, because almost like being forced. Like the whole discussion, now also, I'm not sure why the DNC decided to go with not one, but two people who had baggage when it comes to the with the justice system. I don't know why they decided to go that route. I don't know. I'm not up there. And my choice would have been for Stacey Abrams from Georgia to actually bring a state with her, because California already going with Kamala. The AKAs already going coming. They already coming with Kamala. You ain't got to worry about the AKAs, right? You ain't got to worry about the sober.
Scroll to the polls.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I've never seen this type of unity between Deltas and AKAs at any point in my life.
It's very true. Very true. Right. So I'm like, you know, you know, so You know, and I also know that white women love Stacey Abrams. I don't know why they love Stacey Abrams so much, but they love, white women love Stacey Abrams. So, so I'm like, you know, so, and so then the discussion then becomes like, oh, what about the black men? And it's frustrating to hear some people, you know, again, get stuck in that. I'm also excited. Again, I'm not a big fan of Kamala. I think Chris is more of a fan than I am, but I think that is time to literally, like you said, like just honor the moment that somebody who went to HBCU, who's in a black or black Greek letter organization, could literally be the next president. So that's huge. And you know, unfortunately, all the divisiveness sometimes block those things. So I think, and let me say this. They said that these are the oldest presidents or the oldest candidates we're ever voting for. So there's also a great chance. And I wish there would even been more emphasis on the vice president debate, because there's a great chance that one of these people who are running as vice president right now will be the president, because we are voting for the oldest candidates ever.
Well, they asked the question during the debate in the vice presidential debate, and that was one of the smartest moves that either both of them made to back away from that. I mean, that was Deion Sanders level backpedaling when they brought that up. And I was just like, I mean, it's true, but it's one of those things where it's like, all right, we'll get there, you know? But I mean, yeah, but it's certainly something that people are thinking about for sure. Go ahead, Chris.
Marco, no, I just wanted to defend something that you just said. So I think that, I think that you are right. Like, I think that anytime when you have someone who is in a certain seat, past a certain level, they will get the blame for whatever happens around that time dealing with justice. And so with Kamala, I'm gonna just say that, I mean, she was the top cop for that state. So in at that time, and in terms of the amount of African-American males that were locked up, or they claim that she helped put in jail, I don't think that it is what's being put out there. I believe that a lot of those policies that were already in place when she got there. I think that she was in the process of changing a lot of them, and she just became a victim of circumstance, a victim of someone that was in that seat at that time. But I'm going to say this too. Some African-Americans commit crimes. Some. Not all. Some commit crimes. And so at that point, for someone in a position as top cop of a state, what do they do?
Oh, so yeah, I'm actually in a total agreement with you on that, right? And I actually do defend when people say that. I'm just saying, like, you
Matt,
just like
hey, Matt, like, what? Where are you going with this?
Oh, I knew right. what you were doing. I knew what you were doing.
Right. So, and with that being said, like, again, like, I'm agreeing with you. Like, I often tell people, like, we should read the book, Locking Up Our Own, when it was, yes, the crime bill was terrible. Yes, it was federal. Yes, it influenced the states. Yes, it gave money to the states to do it. Yes, people, like, drugs flooded our community. Yes, black pastors and black representatives supported all this stuff. Yes, yes, yes. And yep, Kamala was in that time frame. And I will say she was in a time before we even said the words criminal justice reform. Like, that was not a national platform, right? So again, that's why I always say, like, we gotta give ourselves grace and give those, anybody that's elected and actually has and this is another thing, has an actual history of politics. And I don't know when the shift became, oh, you're not a politician, so then we'll rock with you when you're not a politician. I don't know how we got there. That's the part that just confuses me. Like, but this is where we at, you know, and how did politics become, understanding politics, or even be able to show that you can actually change, you can adjust, you can adapt, and you're not holding to the same thing that originally got you elected. So I think that's the difference for me. Kamala and Biden has done that for me.
And I think that's a great point to bring up, because politics is one of the few places, you know, where you can be held hostage to one thing that you did long ago, because it's a place where you'll see selective history used almost, I mean, exclusively when it gets to this time of the year. Chris, that's a question for you. How often do you think that you know, politicians or people in the moment are in that room. You know, in the first show, you talked about how you negotiated across the aisle and having to, you know, build those relationships and do things. How often do you find yourself in a place where you have to, you find yourself supporting something that maybe it's not 100% what your platform is, but it's a step to a greater good for you later on? Or, as a caveat to that, is a place where you just kind of find yourself in via association and it takes this turn that it wasn't supposed to be initially?
Give me a example on that.
Well, I would use the crime bill. You know, we hear a lot of things being talked about with the crime bill and about saying, you know, how Joe Biden, you know, he said it himself, and it was a place where he failed in the last debate too, trying to walk back something, saying that, you know, it was this, but then it ended up being that, and it ended up being this, and it should have never went this far. Well, the possibility is always there that it could when you vote on something and you're looking at the nomenclature of what a bill is.
Yeah, no, and know what, things like that, I know from my expertise or just looking back, things, I mean, anytime budgetarily, like when we did things, a lot of things, when I'm not going to say a lot, but a few things that I supported budgetarily where we thought that the money was going to be used for greater good. And we thought that, you know, that that the monies would go where they went eventually after the fact. When we still had that problem, we seen that the money that we had allocated budgetarily didn't go where it was supposed to go. So, you know, it could be said that I'm on the hook for voting for a bill that put money here when necessarily we wanted the money to go elsewhere. Like, you know, and so there have been a few times where I know personally I have supported things budgetarily where we had put in place programs and a strong pipeline for money to go to a certain place, but then it changed at a point after it passed, and now we're going to reallocate the money here, and it goes towards something else. So like I said, like and that makes my point, Marco, where I'm just saying, like, you know, some things it don't look like what it is. Like I'm going to give another example. I'm almost 100% sure that somebody can say, you know, that I held crime. Well, now that violent crime was up at a certain point over 62% in the ward when I was alderman. That's my fault, right? Because I'm the alderman at that time. What did I do to combat things to change that, right? And so that's what folks want to hear. And yeah, I mean, there was a point where violent crime was up extremely high in my ward. Now, we took necessary steps to bring that down drastically, but some people went to jail. I mean, you know, and I'm not sad about that.
Were they asking for the omelet without the eggs in that regard?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I remember riding through some streets or even not getting any sleep. I mean, my wife would tell you, there was nights where I would see something on the news as I'm laying there, and I knew I was just on that block. I'm like, man, if I would have, or if I could have did this or shut this down, maybe this wouldn't have happened. And those are the type of people that I want to see in office, me personally, because I know that they are very passionate about things that they can make an impact on. And so, I mean, I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just saying, those are the type of folks that I want to see who actually really care about a community or their people enough where it bothers them to see things that they could have or that they think that they could have created, you know, another outcome for.
So with that being said, I think that's a great segue into, you know, part of the headline of what we're going to talk about tonight, and that's some of the local ballots and some of the things that we have here in the St. Louis area that's coming ahead. You know, obviously we touched on the presidential, on the national, let's say on the national, because I think that's a lot more than just who's president of the United States. But, you know, we get to weigh in on one thing with the bat, with the vote that's coming up, or the one that you cast already in that regard, and that's the presidential vote. So what comes up next on the ballot for me that I have here, and I'll say that where I'm pulling my ballot from is at vote411.org, which offers a local ballot for whatever address you put in. It's going to be able to speak to that area that you're in. I'm using my own address with this one. So the next thing that I have come up, and I am a St. Louis City resident, is for a U.S. representative, and that's Cori Bush with Anthony Rogers and Alex Furman. Now, this seems to be one of those ones where we already know by acclaim what's going to happen with it. So we know what's going to go on here. But, you know, just so people can learn, just real quick, U.S. representative, what does that mean in the big picture of what you're voting for when you're going to do that? And what does that, having Cori Bush in that seat, mean for our communities on the other side of the vote that we had in August?
Well, Marco ran for the seat, so that's his. I'm going to let him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So definitely, because the Missouri map is very gerrymandered, and the District 1 is all of St. Louis City and a huge chunk of North County, St. Louis. That means there's a high chance that it could be a Black or African American person. And this time around, instead of it being Lexi Clay, it will be Cori Bush. Before Cori Bush, it was Chris is over here clapping. before Cori Bush, there was a Clay that was in that seat for 50 years. So with Cori Bush running, and as the first woman, right, the first woman to earn that seat, and now of course at the same time first Black woman to earn that seat. Is definitely, it's historic. It literally is historic, herstoric, however you want to say it, it's historic. And we live in it. So that's, I think that's also exciting that we already have, while I'm excited about Kamala, I'm just equally excited about Cori, because we are participating in history.
We're responsible for history too. I think that that's an important way that when you look at a vote, you've voted the person in, you're responsible for that history.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think, great point, excellent point. We voted in history, right? So that's to me, it's the power of voting. When people say, oh, voting doesn't matter, I'm like, we have Cori Bush now. If voting didn't matter, we would continue to just have the same people that the establishment would allow us to have. So to have somebody like Cori Bush, who's already making waves, She literally this past week just said, defund the Pentagon. And people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. She's like, well, I don't think it's ridiculous that our military budget continues to go up, but our education budget continues to get cut. Our social services keeps getting cut. Our Medicare keeps getting cut. I think that's ridiculous. So it's about changing the narrative and also bringing in the conversation about issues and situations that people from her district, but also many other districts that are similar to hers, really care about. So I think that's going to be one of the changes, and it's going to be a challenge. It is going to be a challenge. As a U.S. rep, as the part of the legislative branch, they are supposed to be the ones who come up with the laws, or at least the bills that then get voted on discussed, chopped up, chopped and screwed, as Chris was sharing, then finally agreed upon by one house, by the U.S. House of Representatives, or either the U.S. State Congress. And then they, finally decide on voting on those, and hopefully the president say, nope, I don't like it. Hopefully the president says, yep, I like it, and make it happen. So it's a long process. And when I decided to run for Congress, Lexi Clay had only had one bill get passed, that he originally created. Like, he was definitely a great co-signer. So I never want to talk greasy about him, especially we can focus on the future now. Cori Bush is definitely going to be somebody, I think, who's going to either create bills or definitely going to be an amazing co-signer on bills that really do impact the Black communities that are struggling the most, or even maybe even some of the communities that are being uplifted already to get to the next level as well. So I think that's the difference with Cori Bush. And I know that she's going in with the squad. Like, she's going to be part of the squad. She's going to be with AOC and the whole team. So she's going to have support. So I'm hoping people give her a chance. It's going to be a lot of wolves that come out to try to run against her probably in the next 2 years. I'm hoping people give her a chance and let her learn, let her learn how to become a U.S. rep. Because, again, like, look, like, I do not know if Lacey Clay is going to have a conversation with her over coffee and be like, hey, let me make sure you get on a good step. I don't know if that's what happened. I don't know.
And I think you bring up a good point there. When you talk about giving people grace, giving people an opportunity to, you know, prove their worth, to show what they can do, and to learn the job. And I think that that goes to the continuing education about why voting matters, but involvement matters on the other side. Like, one of the great gifts you can give people is your vote, sure. But I also think that one of the great services you can give them is supporting what they need you to support and helping them do what they do, because they're carrying the weight of you on the other side of that as well. Like, exactly. When you focus on that representative part when it comes to Congress and, you know, what that means, you know, so that's that's a big part of the game there. We lost Chris for a second. I know he'll pop back in a second, but I wanna move on to another part of the ballot here that comes up for us next. And it's probably, you know, next to president, it's the biggest thing that you see show up, and that's for the governor race here in Missouri, which is going to be, this time is going to be featuring the incumbent, who is Mike Parson, who rose from the ranks of lieutenant governor when Eric Greitens was removed from his seat a few years ago. And he's being challenged by the state auditor, Nicole Galloway, who is the Democratic rep. And then you also have Rick Combs for the Libertarians, and then Jerome Bauer for the Green Party. I'm sure I can chip in here at this, but I'll ask you at first. I'll just kind of, let's get past what the governor does. I think that if 2020 gave you, if you've been paying even a halfway bit of attention to what's been going on this year around you, you see the power of a governor, and you see the power of what the governor can do, and why our state system governors mean so much in that the way things are set up. But for the Black vote and for the condition of African Americans in the state of Missouri, what does this race mean?
Man, I'm gonna keep it real with you, man. I can't wait. Chris came back
please,
home.
Please do. That's the only thing we got this station for.
Yeah, like, you know, it's one of the reasons why I brought in the concept of how we know that we can actually read Joe Biden's plan, and at least he understands. Okay, some people have articulated our pain, and yet and still in the same plan, they like, yep, we understand your pain, we understand it, but we really ain't gonna do that much for you, or when we do, it's gonna get real trickly down for you. And that's how I feel the same way about this current governor's race. I did watch the governor's forum that was held, and I did not feel like anybody, not any of them, were talking to me.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between, like, okay, I don't think anybody talking to me, but then I definitely heard, okay, these people are not in my best interest at all. So that's where I find myself stuck. Like, okay, I don't hear nobody saying anything that excites me, but they sound like they're trying to execute me. So where do I go? You know.
Chris has rejoined us. We've moved on to the governor race now.
Okay. Yeah. And like, what does the governor's race mean for us Black Missourians?
Well, can I first go back to Corey? Give him one minute. I am excited to see Corey win. I think this is a pivotal change for that district and for our city and for the county. I think that Corey is in a tough position, and it's going to be this next year will be tough for her in terms of figuring out how the rest of her career will go locally and nationally. And I'm going to say locally because that is the number one African-American spot that literally supposed to round up all of the African-Americans in the city and in the county and keep us together and make sure that we are all on one page. So that has been a job that the last person did not do. They kind of worked the opposite end of that, with keeping us separate. And so I believe that if Corey took that charge, then we will see, we won't see situations like what we've seen in the past, having multiple African-Americans run for certain seats stealing the votes from other credible folks and just pushing a African-American agenda. I know when I was involved in politics, we tried to at a point, I know myself, Tashara, I think Mike Butler and a few other folks tried. And I hope that's something that they are still doing now. But I think that she has the number one spot just in terms of unifying blacks. And hopefully I think that she takes that role and runs with it, because blacks right now need leadership. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I just think that we need someone to show us what direction to go.
And I think that that's going to be something that she's going to be held to, because that there's no other option. There's no other thing to go to. And that was what was run on. And it wasn't just for the African-American vote. It was for the vote of our generation. Yeah. And for the people that you're voting down for, and that large group of people who might have gotten inspired to get involved because of her presence and because of what they believed in. And seeing that be that generation that spawned away from the things that happened in Ferguson, and seeing that be a legacy of that, as we continue to see that Ferguson, it was not a one-off, even though everybody, for the most part, people should be smart enough to realize that that was just a cumulative thing, not a not an exceptional thing. But right. Voices that are emerging from that era are the ones that people are looking at to say, all right, we're trusting you to make the things that we sacrificed and that we struggled for in that time, for you to take them and make sure that they don't continue being enabled. That's a big cross to bear for right. anybody.
Yeah. Right. And I want to make a quick connection as well. So when we talk about like Cori Bush being a U.S. rep, I had to do research on what was a good U.S. rep, because the current model I saw that I had it here locally, trash. I didn't like. Like, right? What'd you say?
Trash, garbage.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's like when you grow up in a broken household and you gotta learn how to love.
Exactly.
Exactly. Right. So. And I didn't have to look that far, right? So some of them were still trash, but I saw how they moved. I saw how Ann Wagner, the U.S. rep for Congressional District 2, Republican, who literally brags about, I got the most guns. Crazy, right? But she would show up, she would make sure that she showed support for her representatives in Jefferson City.
Yeah.
Like, we working on this. When they go and campaign with each other, she shows up and they go to campaign as a group. Clay did not do that. I'm hoping Cori could do that, or at least minimize the whole individual tribalism. But when we're thinking about what does a governor mean now, like that's when this one even connected back to the presidency. What the agenda that you want to get done, to get accomplished, do you think it'll be easier under either a Trump agenda or Biden agenda? Or do you want a Galloway agenda or a Parsons agenda or, you know, one of the other parties' agenda, like, I'm sorry, governorship. Like, what do you think a black agenda is going to do? Do you think it's going to thrive better under one person or another? Do we think Cori Bush is going to be able to do more for black St. Louis with Parsons or with Galloway? To me, that's the question. And right now, like, is, you know, to me, it's not that it eliminates some of the complexity, right?
So,
look,
so are you excited to go out and vote for Nicole Galloway?
Not at all.
Chris, when you say do you say individually excited for the candidate or excited for what it represents?
For the candidate and what she stands for. Now, I'm going to vote for Nicole Galloway. I know her husband. I've read through some of her policies. They seem cool. It looked like the standard Democratic playbook. It's nothing exciting for us, you know. And I got a close friend that works for her. And I mean, he has made sure that she is came through and spent time in African-American neighborhoods and communities. And hopefully she understands what our needs are. And, you know, that is at the top of her, that is on her heart, and that she has some type of agenda to help those needs. Right. So we'll see.
I think it goes back to the point that was made earlier, that you have a pathway that seems like you can get through a bit better. You know, this year has been bad for people, for a person that's in Nicole Galloway's seat. You know, you've had to do a lot of things from a distance. You haven't been able to really get out and get involved in pushing your agenda, because a lot of what her agenda was, and Marco, this goes back to what you were talking about, listening to the gubernatorial debates on America's greatest local TV channel, C-SPAN. whose production quality still is somewhere between 1987 and 1978. I don't know what year it is, but at any rate, you know, a lot of what her approach was highlighting what Mike Parsons wasn't doing. You know, Mike Parsons' agenda wasn't making happen, whereas Mike Parson was pushing his agenda and pushing out what he wants to put out, because he's kind of in a position where he needs to run the ball. It's not about throwing the ball to swing anybody to come back. Run the ball, control the clock, and keep people that are on your side feeling strong about you. Whereas I think that for Nicole Galloway, I absolutely support her 100%, because I truly do not feel like Mike Parson is qualified for the job. And I don't think he's done anything that's made me feel any more comfortable with being in this state than anywhere else. Actually, in some regards, it's made me feel less comfortable being in this state. But as a person who's just, you know, taking in what the candidates are saying, not necessarily knowing how the sausage is made, I look at Nicole Galloway as at least being somebody I feel like might be willing to have us at the table.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think she definitely will be willing to have us at the table. I think that, like I said, I got a good friend that works with her, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that he is expressing his concerns and what he thinks, or letting her know just what, you know, just what she should be doing in terms of how she move when interacting and just creating some type of black agenda. Now, I ain't gonna lie, I haven't heard any debate. I mean, I wasn't looking for the debates, but I don't know a lot of her stance is on or where she stands on a few issues, but I know that Missouri is a red state, and so most of the times when you have these statewide candidates, they are walking a fine line. So I'm gonna take a look and see where she's walking that line, on what issues she's walking that line on. Because right now,
if she's walking it, really good, because it's kind of hard sometimes really to get to the heart of what they are.
Or just really quietly. She's just not speaking up on a lot of things, because I mean, Marco may know more than me, just in terms of how she feel about, you know, certain things that has happened locally. Case in point, Parsons has made it very clear about what he thinks should happen with the couple who flashed the guns on the, he has made it clear what he wanted to do.
Perfectly.
And he did that. I don't know. Has she spoken on that? Has she spoken on any situation similar to that, to George Floyd, to Breonna Taylor? And I'm not saying that being funny. I don't want you to think that I'm funny. I really just don't know. But
I would say the majority of what I've heard from her has been more in the public health spectrum. You know, I think that she would be a person that's having a completely different campaign if coronavirus hadn't happened. You know, but a lot of what her thing has been about the welfare of Missourians underneath the watch of Mike Parson.
And that's scary. That's scary. Because you spend your time talking about that, you avoiding something else. Answering some questions that we need to hear.
Right. And it is challenging, right? So even like you said, like, you know, we in Missouri. So when she do have these discussions and conversations, it's still somewhat milquetoast. It is. It's centrist to a certain degree. Like you said, a typical Democrat playbook to a certain degree. And those, to me, that's gonna be one of the challenges. I actually had to look, like when I talked, in the previous episode about how just few black people we really are in Missouri. There are 10 counties in Missouri that have less than 10 black people.
Yeah.
One county has like one black person. Can you imagine being the only black person in your county? Like, that's ridiculous, right? So
when I would imagine it feels like being in those big lecture halls I was in at Mizzou when it was me in the 500 person rooms, and I'm just like, I'm gonna easily be able to see who I'm studying with in this class.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's how I felt when I was down at Rolla. Like, oh, it's I forget I understand what it means to be a chocolate chip. And I'm light skinned, so I was like a peanut butter chip. So it was like, so I'm like, dude, this is crazy. Like, but it's like, yo, like we are not like, and the professor definitely didn't care what happened with the little black boy from St. Louis. He didn't care, or she didn't care, right? I had women professors. So it was interesting when we talk about the issues and topics. We talk about, like, so for example, when crime comes up, oh, that's a St. Louis, Kansas City issue. Yeah. We talk about crime in Rolla. Yeah. Like, you know, like, and I remember one time somebody did get killed in Rolla. The whole city shut down for a week. Somebody getting killed right now, unfortunately, in St. Louis. Like we don't.
It should be like that all around. And I think that in those smaller counties, they don't have any extra support. I think they just handle things differently. And I think that for St. Louis, for us to constantly and continually to be in the top five or top ten as murderous cities, I think that we got to do something different. We need
right. support. So that's where the issues do come different, right? Where we have a Parsons that says, we need to increase police, we need to make sure they have the best weapons, we need to make sure they have immunity and all that, while Nicole Galloway is saying, we need to refund or redistribute funding and allocation to other programs to reduce, like Matt said, like public safety. Like, she is attempting to craft the narrative around, let's work with children before they become criminals.
She's talking about attacking poverty.
Attacking poverty, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Right. And again, in some of these rural areas or farm areas, that poverty is we don't have enough money to take care of cows. Or one of the big issues throughout locally is the word local control, where for them it's like, do we have to use corporate seeds from Monsanto in our farms, what seeds can we use? Where we say local control, we're talking about controlling our police department, so it won't be controlled by Jefferson City anymore. So it's those type of issues that end up becoming so big, but then so macro and micro at the same time. And anybody that's running for governor in the state of Missouri is gonna have a challenge. To the point where even Parsons, people even saying Parsons is not strong enough. And they're going with old boy from the Libertarian Party.
I wanted to touch that really quick, and because there is going to be a proposition that's a part of the city ballot that's going to be about that policing and access there that I want to talk about when we get to that. But I will say that the biggest revelation for me from the gubernatorial debates was Rick Holmes, the Libertarian candidate, who came across somewhere as like a blend between the Red Skull and like Lex Luthor. It was scary. Well, blend a little bit of dash of Magneto. It was scary because here are the key takeaways I've got from that. It's been about 3 weeks since I heard it. Herd immunity, open up Missouri. We need to, anything that sounds like defunding the police isn't patriotic. I was like, oh, all right. So this is as Missouri as it gets, whereas Parsons tends to be, waist deep in Missouri. Rick Holmes has a scuba snorkel on in Missouri ideas. So there's that. So there's always this, and that's something I want to say for another program sometimes to talk about the shifting of what that libertarian outlook looks like, because it's a real thing. And I think it runs counter to some of the conversation that y'all had previously about what would a black political party look like. This is the opposite of that, what it means.
Right.
But in the name of keeping us moving with some of the things we got here, the next thing that comes up is Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor is being led by Alicia Kennedy out of Kansas City, who's a Democratic candidate, and Mike Keogh, who is the Republican candidate on there. Also, two others from the Libertarian and from the Green Party as well. Chris, Lieutenant Governor, what is what role does that play in the administration of the state?
I mean, it's basically like in comparison to a president and vice president role, it's basically that. I mean, they advocate a lot in terms of for seniors and for different programs throughout the city. Throughout the state, and that's mainly it, man. I remember serving under Peter Kinder, and he had a little bit more power.
So he played a role with the Republican Party as a whole. So when it was bigger bills that came down, if you had Peter Kinder support at a point as a Republican, you were winning. And so he would throw that around for wishy-washy Republicans who would tend to forget how to vote at times. And so
he was the whip.
Basically, yeah. I don't see Mike Kehoe as that type of leader now. Mike Kehoe actually spends a ton of time in my old stubborn ground in the 27th Ward. He grew up in a portion of Baden and the 27th Ward. And he spent a ton of time there over the summer messing with or dealing with trying to show support for a senator called Sankofa, which is
yeah,
it's founded by a brother named Darren Seals, who it's a he got something awesome, and it is as most on the ground as you can get. And I
rock with Darren. You know,
yeah, no, Darren is the man, and I'm not saying that. Hold on. Let me go back. I'm not saying that like we should support him for that. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that Mike Kehoe is definitely not the type of leader that that Peter Kinder was. I think that he is more so, you know, he go back and forth. I remember, doing some stuff with him when he was a senator, when I was in the House, and he was extremely helpful, man. He is personally a good guy, but I think that most of the time, when it comes to party line stuff, he won't be with us on anything.
Now, it seems odd to me that we use the comparison of a president and a vice president. But when I go to the polls, I vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, or Donald Trump and Pence. Thank you. There are too many Mikes at once.
I'm like, Pence
and you vote for them as a ticket together. I can't a la carte Kamala and Donald Trump. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Right, not anymore.
No, that'd be dope if we did that. Oh my
god, it'd be now the thing that I'm saying though is that, you know, voting for governor and then voting for a lieutenant governor separately, what are the pros and cons of that? Like, that seems weird to me as a person just on the outside in. Is it a checks and balances thing? Is it a more people at the table type thing, or is it just this is the way we've always done it type of thing? Because the lieutenant governor seat is what got us Mike Parson.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that this is more so, this is how things are done. You know, we've been doing it this way, and we're not going to change it. I don't know if we should correlate the two and keep them and put them together. That would be interesting to see though, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, I was like, wait a minute. We vote for a governor, a lieutenant governor? Like, how does that work? I didn't even know we did that. Like, literally, I kid you not. And because at one point in time with the presidency, it was like that. Whoever came in second place, two people ran for president, whoever came in second place automatically got vice president, right? So, but they definitely changed that. And I was surprised to see that. And when I think about, like, I don't know when that changes. Somebody you got to do some research. When I think about, we talk about, not to too much more on the gubernatorial, but the fact that right now in Missouri, there's a split in the Republican Party between people who are supporting Gridens and people who are supporting Parsons. But to know that both of them ran, and somewhat as individuals for governor and lieutenant governor, that still solidified that party for the state of Missouri. I don't know if the DNC is hoping that Nicole will take care of Central Missouri, and Alicia will take care of St. Louis and Kansas City. Because, and mind you, that's also historic, shout out to the women, to have a woman running for governor and lieutenant governor, and having a black woman as lieutenant governor. So I don't know if that was a strategy that DNC tried to do. I literally am just thinking about that for the first time right now.
But look, this is the thing, Marco, and you and I know this. We all know this. If that was a strategy for them, they should have put more money
or they should be putting more money about with GOTV for the sister, for
Alicia Kennedy.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Because I mean, yeah. I think we see it because we know, but your average voter really not. I mean, I haven't gotten any mail from her. I don't know. You know, the only thing that I've seen is some Instagram and Facebook posts with people that I follow or that I'm familiar with. Yeah.
And I would bet that the people that you see that bring it forward more often than not are people that are on the western side of the state, because that's where she's from. So there's more presence there on that side of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I hear about it more from people in Kansas City. I learned, yeah. You know, when I reached out to learn more about her during the primaries, it was from people in Kansas City that were talking about it and things like that. Yeah. And, you know, and that goes into another idea. Actually, I'm gonna put a pin in that because it kind of goes into the next thing that's on the ballot that I want to talk about, that we can have this conversation all at once. Secretary of State, you'll see the incumbent, who is John J. Ashcroft. And then you have Yinka Fialetti. Is that right, Marco?
Yep.
Okay.
Yinka Fialetti.
Yinka Fialetti, and then there's three others between the Libertarians, the Green, and then the Conservative Party. I don't know what this is. Con? What is the Con Party?
Constitution, probably.
Constitutional Party. Yeah, thank you. That says all I need to know right there. That's a bad acronym. They need to work on that.
The Constitution not somewhat of a no.
Hey, Matt, hold on. One thing I forgot to include about Lieutenant Governor. Yes, is sir. That they preside over the Senate. I forgot about that. And if there is a tie, they make that tie breaking vote. I forgot about that.
Like vice president. Vice president. Yeah. Okay.
That's all. Yeah. It absolutely is a vice president. So to put this into context, when you're going to vote, for the president of Missouri and governor, and the vice president of Missouri and lieutenant governor. However, you get to vote for them separately, and you could have a split in party when you do that. That is a hell of a thing to consider. It adds extra weight and gravity to what you're looking at. So, governor, president of Missouri, lieutenant governor, vice president of Missouri, who presides over the Missouri Senate. Really important. That's really important, but then things get buried down in the card. So, when you look at the Secretary of State, real quick, elevator pitch, Secretary of State, what's that responsibility?
They take care of.
Yeah, no. Go ahead. They are responsible for collecting, compiling, and storing and publishing a variety of state documents. The Secretary of State is keeper of the Great Seal of State of Missouri, and I mean that's mainly it. It's basically like what's the local
But they also responsible for elections.
Yeah. Yep.
And business licenses. So for example,
that's the great seal.
Right. Like, I mean, I literally just applied for an LLC. I had to send it to the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
John Ashcroft. Like,
when I moved in January, when I moved my address, I had to ask Jay Ashcroft to do it. His face is on the website when you request absentee ballots, when you request mail-in ballots, all of that. All of the administrative things, you as an individual private citizen or as a business or all those things, that's covered underneath of the Great Seal of Missouri. So that's a big thing to carry. That's basically the coat of arms and the shield, all in one thing right there,
right,
that you're carrying and saying that I represent all of the interests of Missouri once they pass down from the governor and through the Senate and all of those things. That's a huge, huge responsibility when you talk about regulatory things that you're taking care of. So the reason why
one other thing, when there is a ballot initiative, when the people decide, oh, we want to put something on the ballot, and they go through the ballot initiative process where they got to go and collect signatures. So if you ever collected, somebody was standing outside of a grocery store, we walked out like, can you please get your signature? They're like, no, or yes, right? Then the Secretary of State check those signatures. But then when that ballot measure gets put on the ballot, the Secretary of State decides on the language for that ballot. So even if it's something that you really want and really like and want to describe a certain way, Secretary of State will say, nope, you got to say it this way, or yes, you can say it that way. And if that language comes back, or if you like it or you don't like it, then you got to, if you don't like it, you got to take the Secretary of State to court. Like, so that's, so all of that happens as well.
And
so
who, and who appoints judges?
Who appoints judges? Governors. Governors appoint judges.
And everything is starting to, the cocoon is starting to come together. So real quick, all I want to say is about Secretary of State. We look at the candidates we have here. This is a conversation that I think is important to have as African-Americans and to understand that, you know, betting on Black and supporting Black, I'm pro that to an extent. I'm pro knowing what I'm supporting, even when it's my own people, and making sure that what I'm supporting, just because it looks like me, actually represents me. And that can sometimes put you in a jam job when you show up to a poll and you're voting for somebody simply based on the presumption that we all are looking out for each other, because that's not always the truth. Now, I wanna preface this before I turn it over to you all. I'm not saying that about Alicia Kennedy or Yinka Fileti or anybody like that, but it is the risk that you run when you don't know the candidates and word of them isn't reaching out to you or the responsibilities they're taking on. And then we vote on them simply because of a loose cousin-like resemblance.
Right. Well, Matt, I mean, you know what? I mean, I don't know if maybe it's a new, if it's because of COVID, you know why? Because usually folks will be on the ground a ton.
Yeah.
In different parts of the state, trying to get out the vote or just trying to educate people on who these candidates are. But like I said, I haven't gotten a piece of mail on him either. I don't know why, you know what I'm saying? Like, other than him being Black, I don't know why I should support, like, you know what I'm saying? Or him just being a Democrat. But that could be either a bigger situation like what I'm saying, or what I was saying prior to us starting to record, is that the DNC needs to spend more money marketing their candidates. Because, I mean, do they think that just because he's Black that we're going to automatically go with him? Like what we just said?
Yes, they think that. Yes, they absolutely.
I mean, but we still right. deserve some type of something. I mean, a commercial. I seen a commercial the other day. That's what I seen. I seen a commercial for him. Will that make me vote for him? No, if I was, you know.
So I think it's another conundrum is that because of our voting history, they know there's a great chance that Matt, DeMarco, and Chris is most likely is leaning Democrat. We don't have to spend money on them. I think that's terrible. So I'm agreeing with you, Chris. Like,
hold on. Let me cut you off for one.
Go ahead.
How long? When did COVID start? When did it first?
March 15th.
That's when it started being taken serious.
Yeah, I think that the first thing with the guy that took his daughters to the dance and all that stuff, yeah, that was like March 16th.
This guy has clearly had enough time before that, because look, when you decide to run statewide, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm running for alderman, I can just go down here, it's a small it, no, you have been thinking this out for possibly a year or two. And so even before then, I'm interested to see what his plan of action was in our community. Because like I said, I have talked to a few political folks, African-American and non-African-American, but they still Democrats, but they represent African-American neighborhoods. And from what I'm hearing is, I mean, no disrespect to the brother, but I just heard that he hasn't spent any time in our community figuring out the things that we care about, but also just getting to know the constituents that he want to serve.
Right. So I will say specifically about Yinka, right? Or let me say this. One of the challenges is that there actually was a primary in August and he won it. So he had a contested race for the DNC candidate. Right. But then, and also, like, he actually had the most statewide elected votes than any other person in that during the August primary. Now, but the and as far as his background, like he's past military. He actually served on the Ferguson through a Ford through Ferguson commission, not the commission, but the Ford through Ferguson board. But that does not mean he understands what's going on in the hood. Like that does not equal that. So I'm right there with you, Chris. Just because he served on a board that might have some really great access to some data, some information, and some numbers, may not exactly mean he understands the experience of. And I apologize. I forgot which African country he's originally from. But you know, like I say, he served in our armed forces, and now he's serving in different forms, trying to serve in politics in different ways.
I don't want y'all to think that I'm anti. I'm not anti. I'm gonna vote for him again, and I want to thank him for his service to our country. But at the same time, all I'm saying is that when you're running for these seats, you have enough time to sit down with the elected leaders, at least the ones that you want to get out and get on the ground for you.
And he did come like a caller, state senator Carla May.
I didn't know that. See, that's
maybe that's because he's not in the loop no more. Chris, we need you back in the game, baby. We need you back in the game. Get off the bench.
I'm just telling you guys what I heard from other electors. It's nothing that I know. I'm not giving my because nobody would reach out to me. Why would he? But other African American electeds, that's what. I mean, out of the, let's say I spoke to 10, more than 50% were saying the same thing. Like, we don't know.
And therefore, the DNC should not take our votes for granted. The DNC should not just be like, well, we know you don't like them Republicans, so you definitely go vote for us. I think that's the ultimate conundrum.
And that comes down to the thing that we talked about earlier when we talked about, when we're covering the section about what Cori Bush represents. That's the thing where we can put that pressure back on them in an official capacity. Hold our elected officials accountable to make sure we're not taken advantage of. They're our direct lifeline to the party. Make sure that we hold our elected officials, because when we say the DNC, well, they're the DNC. You know, I mean, they're the people that we need to be holding accountable for those things too, and making sure that we're heard and that we're understood. One more individual position I want to hit to before we hit a couple of the things that are on there. I want to kind of get through this a little quicker. Attorney General. We've got Rich Finneran, and we got Eric Schmidt.
I don't know. Look, this is the thing. So I know Eric Schmidt. Me and Eric Schmidt used to be close when I was a rep. We hooped twice a week. Eric Schmidt, we hung out outside of the Capitol. Good dude.
Let me take a look at him again real quick. You say he hooped. Let me take a look at him and see if he...
Hey, he can hoop. He like 6'4", 6'5". He can hoop.
Okay. Well, is he that 6'5" that can hoop, or is he that 6'5" to hang around the rim? That's a different thing.
No. He got it. He got it. He got a little fade away.
I'll say that's good to know. You did not earn my vote, but that's good to know. I appreciate
when people... And that's what I'm saying. Personally, good guy. I can't support him. I can't support him for the role that he played with the Kim Gardner situation, with him trying to overturn her decision and interceding with that choice that she made locally with the folks that flashed the gun or held the gun at the protesters. That and his stance over the years, just he is changed. I mean, his record has changed. When he was in the Senate, it was different. But I guess now when you are representing Missouri, that they gotta fall in line. So
Chris, let me ask you this, Chris, because I'm learning. It's real talk. How does the Attorney General impact like our laws or even our policing locally? Like how does the state Attorney General impact all these different things?
Just like what you just seen recently, just like what I just explained, So what they did has never happened in the history of our state, right? When they interceded with Kim's decision to prosecute or to investigate the couple with the gun, that flashed the gun onto the crowd of protesters, that has never, like, the state has never done that. Like, they wouldn't do that, right? And so if we had a more liberal person in that seat, or not even that, someone in that seat who just didn't take orders from someone else, right? And they would say, you know what, let me, I'm gonna let that elected St. Louis prosecutor do what she was elected her to do. Let me step back. Now let me reach out to her and offer some guidance if I can, or let me offer how I feel. But that's it. Don't intercede and try to snatch her voice away. No, she was voted into that seat just like him. And so, case in point, you don't see that anywhere else, man. I'm pretty sure that's not the first time that we've had a situation where the AG should have came in and did something. Come on, man. So sorry about that.
No, that's all good. But we also never had a black woman prosecutor. You know, like so that's why it's also always frustrating, I think, for us. We're starting to get firsts.
Yeah.
We got some new firsts.
Yeah.
Right? And now our firsts that we represented, we supported, we are pushing, are now getting intervention from the state on a state level, which makes this different, you know. Or even on the
national level.
Would
I be wrong to make a comparison when we talk about a black woman prosecutor in Kim Gardner? We talk about a black woman prosecutor in Kamala Harris. Would I be wrong to ask what the parallels look like in the support that we give to Kim Gardner in comparison to some of the things that we try to draw out against Kamala Harris?
Right.
Because it feels like Kamala Harris Kim Gardner is just in a smaller level in the same seat that Kamala Harris inhabited, or at least the same role. But I know on a local level, at least in the community, there is 100% support for her from the people that I see. And I think that sometimes we're more or less supporting her, the person, and what she represents, as opposed to the seat that she sits in. Why is there a difference there? And the people that were criticizing Kamala Harris for locking up black people and for having laws against black people, we support Kim Gardner in the way, because I think there should be support based on the situations for both. But we seem to look at it differently. And I think it comes from a lack of understanding those parallels.
Right.
That can just be it.
I agree.
So I think one of the differences, I think, and it's a small difference, but it's a major difference to me, is that, or at least for me, and me and my immediate circle, we had no idea what a prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney did until Michael Brown was murdered. And how horrible, and the fact that it was an election the Tuesday before Mike Brown got murdered. And we like, oh, who is this person? Bob McCullough. Like I never heard of his name. I did not know what a prosecuting attorney really did and how much power they had. And because Bob McCullough did his job so terribly, where articles, national publications came out and said, this is not how a prosecuting attorney is supposed to actually operate. And exposed what their job really was, and didn't help when you had like other people not enforcing to do things. But then when we got other people in these positions, we are expecting them to be able to see the situations from our perspectives. And when it comes to, again, Kamala, unfortunately, I think that we are looking at Kamala from when she was a prosecuting attorney with 2020 eyes. That's, to me, that's the one of the challenges, and to me the differences. And I'm agreeing with you. I don't think it's fair. The success meant, or how many people did you lock up? At one point in time, that was success. To my understanding, Kamala was one of the first people who said, we got to change the definition of success. So that's, to my understanding, she wasn't just going along with that, but can we do that? And there are some people, there's some black people who don't like Kim Gardner, and then we get into the whole conversation about what they were doing was their Second Amendment rights, and like, no, according to our Missouri law, they actually broke the law. The whatever the people in the Central West End who was brandishing the gun, actually had the woman had her finger on the trigger, like that's actually illegal, no matter what you say in the state of Missouri.
That gun was broke.
It doesn't matter. It's a gun.
It was also highly modified, whatever that means.
Right. It don't matter if it was a painted water gun. It's illegal to go out there and wave a gun. It's illegal. And the state was like, well, nope, we're going to make exceptions. So I think that's another reason that does provide support for Kim Gardner, is that we see a higher level, a higher power trying to keep her from doing her job. And we're like, nah, y'all go get this same treatment. Nope, y'all, So I think that's, to me, that's the difference. And I would hope that people can see that. I hope people can see that.
So Kim Gardner, we can't let Jeff Rorta and his racist agenda and damage that, man. That's it. That's
and tight. I think that, and although I pose the question to be the devil's advocate and try to call a little bit of a line to it, is that I also think that supporting Kim Gardner also is supporting our own and the treatment of our own in a seat. And that is important, regardless of the seat. And I don't think Kim Gardner has given any too many. I mean, obviously it's inherent in the job. Kim Gardner hasn't given any particular reasons why we shouldn't support her in what she does. So it's important to support our own in the seat. I think that goes to a lot of things here. Real quick before we turn the corner into this, I lied. There are a couple of more individual seats. One in particular, I definitely want to
get
some response in here, but I'm gonna skip that. But if you've been in any organization in your life, you know what a treasurer does. So there's, you understand what that handling is gonna look like. But with this attorney general, I'm gonna read because we all had this question about who is this guy. Rich Finneran, his three priorities for Missouri, again, this is courtesy of vote411.org, is his first priority is protecting healthcare, including coverage for pre-existing conditions. His second is criminal justice. He promises to address the inequities of our system head on and ensure the law is enforced fairly for all. And third, he promises to take on corruption to make sure that the AG's office benefits the people, not politicians or the well-connected. So, in other words, it's the Democratic space filler.
They got that playbook. That's the basic stuff, man. But it sounds like, I ain't gonna say that.
I mean, it's like we talked about last time, the Republicans got abortion, gun rights.
Thank God.
Democrats got, you know, reform. And, you know, like, yeah, man. So, yeah.
It is what it is. Care.
This episode of the Politics as Usual Wow question mark. We had to break this up into two different parts. So definitely tune in and lock in for the next episode. We'll be dropping later on this week with the second part. We want to have it where you don't have it too long, where you can get it in bits and pieces and get all this dope Miles G's Brothers are spitting. And Tony in.